and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Elizabeth Rauscher, and we're going to talk about quantum mechanics, intention, consciousness. How are you, Dr. Rauscher?
Fine. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. Thanks for taking the time to come on my show today. So before we get started, if you could tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do.
My background is in nuclear and astrophysics. I have a bachelor's, master's, and PhD from the University of California in Berkeley. I worked at the Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory staff in both nuclear science and theoretical physics for 20 years. I've had 4 Navy grants. I've worked on the NASA space shuttle, and I've been a delegate to the UN on long-term energy sources, amongst other things, including teaching at John F. Kennedy University, the University of Nevada in Reno, the graduate program in physics, and some courses at Berkeley and Stanford.
So how did you get into the study of the science of consciousness?
Well, when I was a child, I thought, I really want to know what the nature of consciousness is. So I started from the very small, the atom, and the universe, the very largest, to see where in that whole picture, using the foundation of physical knowledge as the building block towards understanding the nature of consciousness. And that's been my life endeavor.
What is your definition of consciousness?
Very good question, and let me give you an analogy. Forces like the force of gravity, the force of electromagnetic, strong and nuclear, weak force, are defined in terms of particles and waves. But in fact, force itself, like F equals ma, mass times acceleration, Newton's second law, force is not defined except in the properties of force in terms of motion and energy and momentum. But the force itself is not defined. I think that's the way it is with consciousness. We can talk about the attributes of consciousness, which I can give you some ideas about. But the actual nature of consciousness itself is self-referential, but it's global and universal. And yet we're all coming from different pictures trying to figure out what this fundamental being is.
All right. That's a very complicated statement. I understand what you're saying, so I want to make sure that my listening audience understands what you're saying. And you correct me in any way if I'm wrong, please. Are you saying that basically there is one energy and that's all there is, and we don't understand how that energy came to be, but that we do have one energy, but we all have individualities from that energy as well? Is that kind of what
I would
saying?
Say yes and no. I think energy is too simplistic a term. Let me give you some of the attributes of the nature of thought and consciousness.
Okay.
Does it have a location? What is its mechanism? What is the mechanism of thoughts creating reality? Does consciousness have density? What is its dependence on space and time? Does it have a velocity of propagation? Does it have the properties of shape and form? Is it an energy or a force of some sort? How does it interact with matter, that is, mind and matter, or consciousness with matter? What is the nature of it in terms of information theory? And how is it that our individual consciousnesses are goal-oriented? And is the universal consciousness goal-oriented?
Can you answer any of those questions?
I feel from my meditative experience that it does have a density. The further out in the universe your consciousness goes, the less dense it is. I think it has the properties of intuition and intentionality, and that thoughts have real consequences because in psychic phenomena, people can actually perceive other people's thoughts, or animals can perceive human thoughts. I think it has many of the properties I discussed, but it's none of those. It's in its own reality. It's all of them combined and more.
Since you are an intuitive too, I gather, how do you think that the original intention came about?
Was the origin of all existence? That's a very good question. I've been looking at that for years. And in general, scientists and physicists do not really delve into the nature of consciousness. In fact, in a way, they sort of deny its existence. They don't really realize that no action, no intention, no knowledge, nothing can exist without the action of consciousness as a fundamental nature of their own being. They don't address the issue in many cases. Some are addressing it more in recent years, but one of the things that you had mentioned in the past, and is true, we don't really have a language yet. We have the neurophysiologist. I'll tell you about a quick meeting in India, in Mumbai. There was the Buddhist, the physicist, and the neurophysiologist. The neurophysiologist said consciousness is an epiphenomena of neural activity. That is, the physical comes first and then the consciousness. The Buddhist and the physicist somehow agreed that consciousness may be the primary substance of reality, and then comes matter, as a bit condensed out as the physical plane from a higher dimension of all conscious intention and being.
Okay. I think I would agree with the Buddhist and the physicist.
Yeah, the Buddhist and the physicist got along fine.
So do you think that states can... Well, let me back up for a minute. Do you believe that we have complete free will?
No. I believe that probably the most likely explanation is we do reincarnate or somehow choose this life. And from a higher perspective, like if you were in a helicopter over a mountain, you could see two cars driving around the curve of the mountain, but they don't know each other's future. They're like at the physical plane until they pass each other. But we have this higher perspective we come into life with. And I think that the only free will really is accessing the higher spiritual dimensions of what our intention and the purpose of our life is.
Okay. Personally, I agree with you, but there are going to be many scientists out there that say, why do you think that? Is there some kind of science that led you to believe this? Or has it just been your experience?
It's been my personal experience, but I also have a formalism in science, and which is explained in the book that's going to come out in a couple of months from World Scientific. I'll tell you more about the book. But what my experience is as a child is why certain things came into my life, like interest in Nikola Tesla's work, to free man from drudgery so he could think and reason by developing electromagnetic power grid, and things like that that struck me as very important. One of my relatives said to gain and disseminate, the purpose of life was to gain and disseminate knowledge and make the world a better place. So why would I adopt that as an important part of my past? And so these incidents seem like actually the future affecting the past, but from the higher perspective, it's all happening at once. So you could say, I have free will. I can choose vanilla over chocolate ice cream, but why? Why is it you like vanilla? What is the cause of liking vanilla? In other words, is there a more basic cause than that, than just a current free will preferential idea?
Okay. So what is your belief? Do you think that probably states can be expressions of consciousness and states are consequences of intention?
What do you mean by state?
An event.
Oh, events. Okay. I think events may come about through both a life plan and carrying out a duty that we have in this existence. And sometimes circumstances shape our being, like who we're born to and our environment. But within that, how we shape that environment to our meaning of life and our purpose of life is intrinsic to our own being. And that may be access to higher consciousness within ourselves. In other words, I think that ideas and inspiration and intuition seem to be coming from a higher dimension. As I said, I have worked out a physics formalism to make the compatibility of consciousness consistent with the main body of physics, and that is that we actually have a hyperdimensional reality, and that explains the synergy of consciousness with the physical world. The book that's coming out is called The Moons of Pluto, Solving Einstein's, Maxwell's, Schrodinger, and Dirac Equation in Complex 8 Space. And it's by World Scientific. It's going to be out in about a month. The key to it is that we actually have the fourth space of space and time. That is, if we're going to meet someone for pizza, we say when and where. So time really is, in Einstein's view, the fourth dimension of space. But then I complexify that space into eight space, and that allows the non-locality of consciousness, both from the spiritual perspective and from the ability for our connection with each other across space and time.
Do you believe that intention can manipulate the physical reality, mass?
Yes. If intention is directional and strong enough, you can affect matter. There is cases of psychic healing. There's cases of psychokinesis or mind over matter. And my late husband, William Van Bice, and I did a number of experiments using electronic sensors to see whether people could intentionally affect them during an on period as opposed to control runs. And we found a highly significant correlation, either when people that intended were about 8 miles to across the country from the laboratory site, which was shielded from ordinary interaction.
Do you believe that, and when I'm asking you if you believe, I'm really talking about from a scientific perspective, because I'm, as you know, I'm trying to bridge the gap. So I want.
Well, belief is a very interesting issue because it depends on the preponderance of evidence in your own life. And people say, well, you have to have a statistical amount of events to believe in something. Yes, that's true. But do you believe in your birth? That's one event. So sometimes it takes only one event to make you believe in something.
Very good point. Never thought about it that way, but that's a good way to, a good analogy. Okay, a lot of people say if intention can manipulate reality, why can we not manifest that car that we want in our front yard?
Well, in a sense, you can. It's through intention. I would say it's probably easier to intend something good, like maybe a method of, since high school, I felt that we had to get off of fossil fuels, so I took a crisis in the oil situation to force, as a forcing function, for us to look for alternative, less impacting ways of dealing with energy necessary for crops, necessary for human quality of life and betterment, but to look at it in a different way. So there's forces to be that we need to pay attention to. And intending the car, everything's an exchange in the universe. You have to give to get. Nothing is free. You can't just say one day, I just feel like I deserve that car. It's a Rolls Royce Ghost or a Rolls Royce Silver Shadow or whatever you want, a Mercedes-Benz Tan, for instance. But there's the action component that you have to take on the physical plane to create the circumstances for that intention to come to reality. Because the universe will give, but you have to work to create that circumstance, to create that in your life. And in a certain sense, there's sweat equity. You have to deserve it. You have to create the circumstances where you do deserve that gift.
So let's talk about that for a minute. You said you thought that it was easier to create the positive. That brings me to ask a question. I want to talk about mind for a minute. What is your definition of mind?
Well, let's distinguish between brain and mind. In general, neurophysiologists, biochemists, and so forth defined brain in terms of the physical properties of the various parts, the amygdala, the hypothalamic, pituitary axis, the pons, violi, and so forth. And a friend of mine wanted to find out the nature of consciousness, so he went with a medical friend of his to dissect cadavers to look for consciousness. And I said, you're too late. The consciousness is gone. The guy's dead. And I said, it's not so simple. It's not just finding out a gland and its function, which, by the way, helps us understand what's going on. But consciousness is something that transcends brain. In fact, you'd have to say, if ghosts are real, and I can tell you some stories about that, if ghosts are real, then they don't have a brain. But they do have actions that mimic what we associate with conscious awareness and some form of existence.
All right. It's just amazing just to sit here and listen to you. It gets me like in an altered state just sitting here and listening to you talk. Okay. So what then, if you said it's easier to create the positive, most people are running through their, what I call little mind, you probably call it ego. I don't know what you call it, but most people are constantly thinking, I don't want this, I don't want that, I don't want this, I don't like this, I hate that, I can't stand this. So they seem to create those things easier. So to me, it's harder to create the positive because you got to stay in the moment to do that and aware.
Right. Number one is what you said, Eva. You have to stay in the now. You have to do both. You have to stay in the now enough. That is, you need to look at the sunset, the butterflies flying, enjoy the sun, the warmth of the sun, listen to the birds, look at the flowers to perceive your experience of being, as well as planning for the future and really assessing and sometimes resolving the past. So we live in past, present, and future, but we need to accommodate all of those. But we need to control them. Now, the little mind and the ego, the thing is, the ego has two sides to it. One is, we wouldn't be in a physical body and in this existence, in this classroom of life, without the ego. If we didn't have an ego, we wouldn't eat and do the necessary things for survival. So we need some aspect of ego, but it's the executive part of the frontal lobe and also the general nature of consciousness that we control the role of ego. So ego doesn't run us, but ego is a tool for us. And the other thing you mentioned is, I don't want A, B, and C. The problem is, as psychologists say, the don't get doesn't get heard. So often the fear of what will happen concentrates you on the negative. And that is really a very hard lesson to concentrate on. It says, I don't want that, to say what you do want in your life. So make a positive affirmation rather than a negative affirmation, because the universe is listening, but it may not hear the don't want.
Exactly.
It might hear the I would like. And I think in a way it's a positive request that's gentle. I mean, respect the universe and say I would like, and make sure to say thank you.
Do you think ego is a brain function of conditioning? Because that's kind of what makes us be distinct, is that ego. Is it a brain function, or is
it
a
conditioning? Well, we can say, does ego incorporate the aspects of personality? In other words, what really is ego? Is it I want? Is it only I want? Or is the ego, can part of the ego say, I will like to make the world a better place? Because ego isn't necessarily negative. It's part of the structure of being. So it can be, my ego says, yes, I would like a green revolution. But it's to proceed in a positive direction to create that reality and say, You could say, I don't want to be on a fossil fuel-based reality, because wars are waged on oil and the need for oil. But to say, what can I do to create the circumstance of new inventions and new technologies that will replace fossil fuels? So that's a positive intention in which you can take a set of action components. I think that ego is related to identity, but identity can be positive elements as well as I don't want elements.
Let me see if I can get this thought to you. Do you think that what creates within us, or what enforces creativity within us, would be emotion, or... And I'm using emotion here as equivalent to voltage, because words are just that, they're just words. They got to have something attached to it.
Well, emotion is part of the biochemistry of the brain, the endorphins, enkephalins, dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine.
But
those
are the manifestation within
the brain of emotion. But we, in the Western civilization, try to train the intellect. In other words, how to do the multiplication tables, but not how to control, have access to, and use the better aspects of emotions. We're told to shut up and sit still in school, and that's not educating the whole being, because we need to educate our physical, our mental, our emotional, and spiritual states.
Okay. I realize that there's no dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin floating around in the universe. But something, let's say that we think a thought, a positive thought, and
atoms start oscillating, and they and information sent out into the universe and received in, kind of like a revolving door. So when I was using the word emotion, I was really using the word as voltage. Is that what is the voltage behind what pushes things to make things happen faster or slower? Does that make sense? It's hard. Language is a problem.
Well, I think that we really need to develop a new language like you've suggested, that we need to make means to communicate across disciplines and across people of different backgrounds. The word voltage is kind of a yes and no. The actual potential difference between cell walls and other aspects of the human body do, in fact, operate to affect the biochemistry of the body. But what I think is that, like, is electromagnetic fields the nature of the field of consciousness? Yes and no. They're an interface, but they aren't the answer. They aren't what consciousness is. I see it as a field of all being, but I also see that it specifically interacts with the physical world within us and all of nature. So I think voltage is too simplistic a term to use.
Okay. What do you believe, how do you believe consciousness communicates with, how does brain interpret consciousness? Is it through signaling? Or how do you think that happens?
I think it at the lowest denominator of level, yes, it is signaling and biochemistry, but the actual nature of consciousness, what I look at it is my personal philosophy is that consciousness is sort of the global reality. It's like the whole iceberg, and the physical part is 10%, the tip of the iceberg that we see. And we only really notice consciousness as pieces here and there instead of seeing it as a global reality that binds the universe together and allows all communication ultimately to happen. Not only between individuals, but between yourself and your higher being.
Do you believe that mass really exists?
I think so. As the joke goes, I think gravity sucks. Because at this point, I'm not able to levitate. And I do think the force of gravity exists. In fact, the ancient Greeks had two concepts, gravity and levity. Gravity was formulated by Newton in a very succinct manner and is really a foundation of modern physics. But I think there's maybe a force of levity. In other words, not only a force of attraction, but you might say levity is expanding, and expanding maybe by a positive nature of repulsion. So I think we have half the picture and not the whole picture.
Okay, my next question is, do we live, I'm going to just say the whole thing, so listen to the whole thing before you answer. Do we live in a holographic environment? If we do, then that means on the level of what I call the irreducible unit, there's not any mass. So I guess that's what I'm asking. Do we live in a holographic environment, and is the mass that we see really just particles stuck so closely together that we think that they're mass?
Well, the holographic metaphor of which Carl Priebram and Ed Mitchell and others have looked at, I think, is more a metaphor than a model of physical reality to formulate in detail the nature of existence in terms of hologram alone is not adequate or not correct, but I think the metaphor gives us an idea of how the pieces connect elements of the whole. So I'm actually not really into that particular model. Therefore, the question about does that model contain mass is to me a non sequitur. It doesn't make sense.
Okay. I don't understand that, Elizabeth. Help me understand.
Well,
that.
A hologram can represent with a piece of a holographic representation really contains the whole, but it contains it at a much less resolution. It loses information. So from the holographic model, I can't see how you could deduce the nature of matter out of it because it's an informational representation.
Okay. Okay. So is there an irreducible unit? Would that be
Your fundamental unit of like a quark or a gluon?
Uh-huh.
That's a very interesting question. I spent many years in high energy theoretical physics in which the idea was that there was some fundamental unit, which actually came from the ancient Greeks with the word atom, which means irreducible. In other words, you cannot reduce it beyond the nature of that fundamental unit. And I'm not so sure. I think it might be we can infinitely divide. And as physics finds smaller and smaller units of existence, like with the high energy accelerators, it may be go on infinitum. Jeffrey Chu had sort of suggested that too, who was the director of the theoretical physics group when I was at Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. So actually, I don't know the answer, but I suspect it's not going to be a thing. We'll just say that's it. Because as we go along, we keep discovering more. It seems like knowledge is a path, not an end.
Interesting. Okay. I know that you worked with the particle accelerator. How does that thing to contribute to mankind, humanity?
Excellent question. Is the money being spent on accelerator physics, which of course I was romanticized by in high school when I used to go and sneak up to the Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory and pretend I was an employee when I was a kid. I looked very serious, glum, and bored, so that I looked like I fit in and catch the bus, go up and look at the Bevatron. I think, yes, it's part of giving us fundamental knowledge, but it isn't going to give us the ultimate answer, in my view. Most physicists think it will. So in that sense, I differ. I think it's very interesting, very useful, but I'm not sure if you say ethically and morally, is it worth spending the money on the Large Hadron Collider or the Fermilab device? Is it worth spending it on that than to overcome starvation? The problem is that the roots of starvation have to be met, as well as trying to save individual lives. So it really requires a whole different conceptual framework, how to reduce pain and suffering and enhance the quality of life. As a physicist, of course, I'm interested in accelerator physics, and I'm actually sad that they're talking about closing the Fermilab accelerator facility. But on the other hand, I can see the argument of trying to spend the money in other areas. So it's the conflict within myself. But I do think that fundamental knowledge, I think that's part of the purpose of life, is to gather the fundamental, as much as you can, about the various fundamental types of knowledge. Now, some of the fundamental types of knowledge is new cures in medicine, a new understanding of the medical modalities, a non-invasive medicine. It's about the nature of man and how man can live with nature and not destroy nature and still have a quality of life. It's about our own spiritual path and the total path and the nature of spiritual beings. So it's all of these aspects which gets manifested as various ideas within the cultural context.
What was the? What did they want to for us to know? What were they hoping the accelerator would find?
Well, they wanted to find what's called the Higgs particle, which would describe how matter has its properties. In other words, how is it that a proton, electron, a neutrino, a pion, a muon, Cassi particle, megaparticle, how come each one of those have different quantum numbers, have different properties and different masses to explain what mass really is?
Okay, we were talking about the Higgs particle when we got some kind of technicality went on with the shows. But so finish up what you were saying, and then I want to talk a little bit about your work with heart math.
Okay, what I'm saying is that there's a drive to try to understand what the smallest thing of the universe is. What is the fundamental building blocks of reality? My personal feeling is I'm not sure that that information is going to tell us much about consciousness. It might tell us something, and it does tell us useful information because all knowledge can lead to a better understanding of existence in its very nature. If you wanted to look at it, studying nature is studying God's creation, so you get more information and knowledge about God. It's not only the Higgs, but there's what are called many Planck black holes. There are many other aspects of what the Large Hadron Collider and CERN will give us, including a better understanding of the quark model and so forth, the constituents of elementary particles. So that is the striving and the drive in that direction. I feel that as far as the nature of consciousness has macro properties. Maybe it has micro properties too.
That's
but the macro properties of consciousness can be understood and studied more simply, and I think it's a very neglected area of research.
That's actually one of my questions. Do you think consciousness is in gradients?
In what?
Gradients.
Well, gradient is a change of something.
Yeah, exactly.
Gradient is the change of, say, a temperature gradient is from, say, high temperature to low temperature. So gradient is a property of something, but I really don't know that it has anything to do with the nature of consciousness.
I guess I should use, you know, consciousness means so many different things to so many different people, so I guess the best
That's
thing
true.
Would have been, would consciousness defined as awareness be in gradients? Everybody has different levels of awareness means fundamentalism, for example, versus enlightenment. Those are gradients.
Right.
In my
well, they're differences. I don't know whether I would call it a gradient, but they're distinctly different attitudes, assumptions. And actually, our assumptions about what we're studying really colors to a great degree as to how we interpret what we find. Because we tend to screen out that which is not consistent with our philosophy. What I found the most important thing in my life is to find something that is completely inconsistent, like the nature of psychic phenomena was inconsistent with my assumptions before I studied it. But when I found out it to be true, then I spent 3 days revising my philosophy to fit the reality. You have to be open-minded, shelve things, as I call it, not make a judgment, not rush to judgment, and not make your judgment final. In fact, knowledge is an ongoing process. And it's like when you grasp things and you think you really know the answer, it's likely you'll have some experiences that tell you you don't, and that you're on to a new adventure to find new information.
Yeah. When I first had my wake-up call, I woke up the next morning thinking I knew everything because the knowledge had increased so much overnight. You don't know my story, but you will when you come to visit me. And the more I learn, the more I realize I don't know anything.
I've learned some things in life, but I know that we are just on the tip of an iceberg and there's so much more to learn.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing with HeartMath.
Oh, HeartMath, it was quite interesting because we got in touch a number of years ago. But in more recent years, me and my late husband developed a very highly sensitive patented magnetic field detector that detects the changes in the magnetic fields of the Earth ionosphere resonance. And some of this is produced by vibrations within the Earth and from solar wind activity coming by as charged particles and waves that affect the ionosphere. And so the HeartMath group commissioned me to do a detector with them, a part of my detector system, to for the Global Coherence Initiative. And so they're going to try to deploy 100 detectors around the world. What's interesting about these detectors is they detect the fundamental frequencies which we evolved in and relate to our life force. And we cannot live a long time without these frequencies. We'd have to artificially generate some of them to be able to go to a mission to Mars.
And
so,
can I ask you this? What are the frequencies? What range do they fall in?
Well, they really fall in different ranges, all the way from what's called extremely low-frequency radiation. And actually, we even receive cosmic rays up towards the gamma end of the spectrum. We have, of course, the ultraviolet, the infrared, and the visible that we notice, particularly the infrared, which is heat, and the visible. But there's a huge spectrum of frequencies from the extremely low frequency end of the band to the ultra low frequency to the radio frequencies on up to the visual and up into X-rays and gamma rays. If we evolved in that environment, if we don't live within that environment, we cease to exist without that life-giving set of radiations that we're used to and that we're evolved in.
That's so interesting to me.
Is it stochastic resonance? Is it that it's doing to us?
Stochastic comes from the word statistical. No, it's many, many aspects. It ties in with the biochemistry. It actually affects our brain waves, the solar cycle. I have 50 pieces of data showing that certain frequencies of coronal solar ejection actually affect our brain waves, so that now that we're going into a high solar activity, which happens to be about the time we're having freedom marches in the Middle East, and also since there's the interest in 2012 related to the Mayan calendar, we're actually going to have a high solar activity at about the same time. So people's expectation and the reality of the influences might be very synergistic and work well together.
Interesting. Well, we've got about 5 minutes. Do you want to give us a synopsis?
I'd like to say some things about what I've learned and all the stuff I don't know. What's so fantastic is, there was a statement by the past head of UC Berkeley that I, Charlie Tart, and Jeff Mishalov were wrong because almost everything is known. Now, the interesting thing is I didn't respond to that because I think we almost know nothing. I consider that fortunate because then we got all kinds of possibility of changes. I made a list of what I've learned about life. And in my life, I've been a meditator. Psi exists. Direct knowing exists. Thoughts are real. They have real physical consequences. The past obviously affects the future, but I believe these future events are so strong in our psychic field that they affect the past through hyperdimensional geometry. Sometimes the truth is hard to come by, and it does require hard work. We have to dedicate ourselves to the search for truth and knowledge. In many cases, what is said to be true may not be, and what is said to be myth is true, but you have to sort it out, because there's truth within known knowledge and truth within mystical knowledge, but not everything that's hypothesized is true. What's called the blue pearl of spiritual wisdom is something that you observe in many years of meditation. And whatever it means, I've experienced it, and it's real. A kundalini enlightenment exists, and is real. I also have seen in my meditations like Ari, which is on the $1 bill. It's like the eye of God looking at you, observer and observed. So it must mean God exists, but it's very interesting. It's a very interesting phenomenon. I've talked to a few other people that have had that experience. One can do the firewalk even with 6-inch flames, so it's not just hot coals. And I'm very afraid of fire, and I did it anyway with no problem. So it's possible. One can communicate with animals and plants and each other through mind and consciousness. Kings and queens wear crowns, but that has to do with the crown chakra. And it's like giving emphasis that knowledge can come from without if we really listen to the nature of the universe and our own fundamental nature. Extremely low frequencies and RF frequencies can profoundly affect our biological being, but they have to be a very specific waveform, duty cycles, intensities, and other characteristics. And I've developed pain reduction systems, cardiac normalizing systems, and other systems using pulse magnetic fields of very highly specific frequency intermixes and have a number of patents to increase the quality of life. The solar activity, when it's high solar activity, affects our brain waves and affects us. My interpretation is the sun is talking to us and giving us messages, and we need to listen. Ghost phenomena is interesting, but Bill and I, my late husband and I, were driving in this place that was very haunted. And I felt like there was a lot of ghosts, but I didn't see any. But one time we were driving along at dusk, and a black ghost floated across in front of our car, turned, and where the eyes would be were kind of like open sockets. But I could feel surprise from the ghost, apparently from us being able to see it, and it slowly disappeared. And as I said to Bill, the ghost was out for a float. We both agreed on what we saw in detail. So I think that's like this one thing I was saying about one white crow. If you're born, you know you're born and likely to die. Life after death appears to exist. And I can't, everybody has to find that out for themselves. How they think about that, what experiences they've had that lead them to think about that. Also, I believe the sun, the S-U-N, is like, it's related to S-O-N, the Son of God, the sun god is one of the gods that actually is the life giver. Other questions such as, what are UFOs and extraterrestrials? I don't know. I haven't had any experience to lead me to believe that, but I don't discount what others say and believe. I just leave those questions open. And that's what I was saying, to be non-judgmental. And if you hear something that you don't agree with or you don't know, just shelve it and see what happens, what evidence might be for it, what evidence might not be for it. And listen carefully to what people say, but don't believe everything, that you have to find out what that means within your own living being and conscious state.
Thank you, Elizabeth, for coming on my show. Those are
well,
very
most
profound
welcome.
Statements, and it just puts me in a trance almost listening to you. You're an enigma. Thank you. I look forward to your coming to visit me next week or 2 weeks, whenever it is.
Oh, I think it's going to be a blast, and I think your questions were excellent.
Thank you, Elizabeth. So thank you, for and come back.
Thank you very much, and I'll be happy to do that.
Good night.
Good night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health. Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health.
Consciousness and health. Consciousness and health.
Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Hare.